The Guardian. Football Weekly with James Richardson.
Football Weekly. Today, Manchester Derby. Old Trafford shaken by Wayne Rooney's acrobatic strike. And then again, when he landed. We salute Wayne's world-class strike and say years from now when they talk of Rooney's vintage moment, they'll mean this, not that business with the elderly masseuse. Elsewhere, relegation six-pointer, West Brom, West Ham. We ask, what did Scott Parker say at half-time? There's Champions League, Milan Spurs and the return of Arsenal, Europa League, Post and misty-eyed nostalgia ahoy as Bailey Funk Fernando Duarte salutes Ronaldo, his heavyset present and that business at the motel shouldn't dim memories of how great the Brazilian was, and the same goes for Ronaldo. All of that and more in Football Weekly. Your podcast crew includes Barry Glendenning.
Hi, Joe.
Sean Ingle.
Hello.
And Fernando Duarte.
Hello, guys. Happy Valentine's.
Happy Valentine's. It's so sweet of you, Fernando.
Thanks. It's with love.
Yeah, okay, cool. And happy Valentine's to all of you listeners out there in Podland. Now, big game at the weekend, the Manchester Derby. Sean Ingle, better than the last one.
Oh, absolutely. It was a really enjoyable game. City went for it. I thought they were a little unlucky, but United just had a little bit more killer edge, and obviously Rooney's goal made the difference.
Rooney's goal. Was it special?
It was good, but it's not as good as a few other overhead kicks that come to mind.
Describe it for us, first of all.
Well, cross came in from the right. He swiveled and then whacked into the top corner.
You paint a picture there.
Not really.
You
no.
really do. No,
it,
well,
it was Nani's deflected cross, and then he shinned it, and it flew off his shin into the top corner. It was a fluke.
If people want to see some great overhead kicks, they should YouTube the German Bundesliga goals of the season. And there's a goal by a guy called Jürgen Cobra Wegmann. I think Cobra's perhaps not his real name. But for Bayern in 1988, where he basically reaches for the ball, jumps in the air, and then does a flying. It's almost like Ryu in Street Fighter. It was that good.
For the benefit of people who take everything I see, absolutely literally, yes. I didn't think it was a fluke. That was a very good goal, but I actually thought... Manchester United's first goal was probably better.
Really?
And as the overhead kicks go, I definitely think Trevor Sinclair's
A lot of people are saying Trevor Sinclair. We've got Ryu from Street Fighter from Sean there.
We got Zico in 1982 against New Zealand in the World Cup. That was also...
Hugo Sanchez used to score one of them a week.
Gianluca Vialli, when he went to Juve, used to score one of those a week. And, of course, we can't let a conversation about overhead kicks go by without mention of Carlo Parola, the man of the Panini sticker, and above all, Fabio Quagliarella. Google him, YouTube him, my word. Bullet time matrix effects as he hangs motionless, well, not motionless, hangs in the air while the time passes and et cetera, et cetera. Anyway,
Ronnie Whelan scored a similar-ish goal, more of a scissors kick against Russia for Ireland in the European Championships in 1988. And that kind of went in off his shin as well, so it was kind of lucky too.
It may have been his shin that touched the ball last, but I don't think it was an uncoordinated attempt. It was extraordinary. I think this was the thing.
It was incredibly athletic and acrobatic, but the fact of the matter is he was trying to hit it with his foot and hit it with his shin. So technically, if you want to really
I think he was just trying to make contact with it. It was a long way up when he hit it, I think. Anyway, well,
you'd have to be churlish in the extreme to say that was not a good goal.
All right, now City, are they out of the picture? 8 points behind, having played a game more than United?
I think probably yes. I mean, I think on our final show of last year, you were talking about it being a five-way race, Jimbo, and I did point out that usually you rarely see more than three teams fighting out at the climax of the season, and I think now it's really down to United and Arsenal. I mean, I guess, you know, look at three-way action. They had some of it when United, Arsenal and Leeds in 99, and when Liverpool, Everton, West Ham in 86. But, you know, I think it's going to be these two slugging it out.
All right, I'm going to talk to you for a second, Sean, because Barry and Fernando dissolved at your mention of three-way action. Chris Smalling.
He played very well. I think he was sensible. He didn't try and do too much. He was a reliable partner to Vidic. But it's one of those games, to be honest, where, you know, the result provided the narrative. If City had of, I mean, I thought it was a very even game. If City had of scored earlier on, or, you know, they had a couple of chances, even when it was 1-1, it looked in the balance. It was a very tight game, but again, United came through, just like they have done several times this season in very tight games.
All right, a couple of
Silva had a great chance. They usually buries it. I mean, they could have changed the game totally. Because it was like, what, 3-4 minutes when he missed that one? Mm. You know, if they scored that early, It would have rattled some cages, I think.
Mm. It certainly would have altered the narrative, wouldn't it? A couple of tweets. First of all, somebody asking, sorry, I managed to lose this one. Somebody asking whether we think Rooney's goal is evidence of a return to form, or whether it's just the dying embers of a, you know, the last embers of a dying star type thing.
I wouldn't say that, but the goal aside, he was very poor again. And now his celebration, his sort of messianic celebration would suggest perhaps...
It's a bit Corcovado-esque, isn't it?
Yeah, but, you know, he scored an overhead kick. Yeah. And again, he hasn't scored what's in ages, so...
He scored five Premier League goals this season. But I would hate to think his best days are behind him, but... He hasn't been playing well, and he didn't play well on Saturday.
And just before the goal, he tried to miscontrol the ball awfully. That kind of clucked off his shin and rolled to no answer.
Well, it all leaves Man United 4 points clear of Arsenal, who, of course, won in style at home to Wolves. We'll be talking more about them in a second or two. Meantime, on to the other derby this weekend, the Derby of the Wests, Brom v Ham. Extraordinary start to this game. West Ham 2 goals down in 7. But then Scott Parker stepped up at halftime. What did he say, Sean Ingle?
Well, we haven't got an official transcript, but it was generally on the lines of, come on, lads, we're professionals. You know, we're going to get relegated if we keep playing like this.
I can feel shivers down my spine.
Let's pull it together. Come on.
Right.
Come on. Come on.
He said, gentlemen, we are in hell. And if we're going to climb out of it, we're going to climb it inch by inch. You know, I think he did the Al Pacino thing from Any Given Sunday.
Oh, right. Sorry, yeah.
You look so mystified.
I knew there was a film involved.
Yeah, I can't do Pacino. I can do the De Niro face only.
Boy, can he, listeners. good. All right. Well, thanks for clearing that mystery up.
I think Mrs. Duarte Parker might see that face tonight.
Oh, you naughty. That game says a lot about Evan Grant's, you know, managerial capabilities, isn't it? If there was any doubt that Chelsea team, for example, did the job, albeit, you know, Mr. Grant, I think yesterday is kind of like a seal of confirmation. Hmm. Basically, what the hell is he doing at the touchline? Just looking cool, you know.
Well, he said he does that. It was, whatever the motive for it was a remarkable turnaround from West Ham, coming back from 3-0 down to 3-3. Scott Parker, actually, one of the more educated footballers. He went to Haberdashers in London, which is, I believe, the 13th best school in the country, according to government league tables. Here's a fact for you. Sean Wright Phillips also went there.
Is that a posh private school?
Well, it's a grammar, isn't it? Producer Ben, it's a grammar. Hey, producer Pete went there, is that right? No, he didn't.
You went to a posh school.
Oh, Pete went to the school down the road that used to... They probably had a bit of trouble at bus stops. Well, that leaves West Ham still, of course, in the bottom three, but they're only 2 points from safety.
Yeah, but it's worth pointing out that five of their next 8 games against top six sides, you know, they've got to play, you know, they're away at Spurs, they're away at Chelsea, away at Man City, they're home at Man United, home at Liverpool. There's no way that team should be going down. If you've got a team that's got the likes of, you know, Green, Parker, Cole, being in there, they should be good enough to finish 16th, 15th. But you know, the way the running's looking, they've got it all to do.
Robert De Niro wants to add something.
They had a better team that went down, remember? With Di Canio, Carrick, Defoe, everybody was there. Remember that team that went down with Glenn Rother? It was a much better team in terms of like individual values, and they still went down in the last day.
They didn't have the same kind of inspirational manager in those days. That might prove the crucial thing. Speaking of inspirational managers... Roy Hodgson, terrible record recently at West Brom. But if anybody can add a few W's to their, Roy, how does that work for you?
Well, he struggled initially at Fulham when he came in. If you remember, they went on an awful run, and he can't afford to do that. West Brom's next couple of games, they've got Wolves next weekend. They've got, I think Stoke fairly soon after. So they need to really hit the ground running, and you wonder how Roy's. They certainly need the organisation that Hodgson will provide. But sometimes he takes a little time to get going.
Certainly does. Now, relegation battle just generally to finish things off. Everton fans complaining last week they didn't get enough coverage. I think this is the perfect opportunity.
And their players were terrible yesterday. David Moyes looked really, really fed up. He looked actually like a man who was considering throwing in the towel, to be honest. I don't think I've ever seen a manager look as just ticked off. Sitting on the sideline.
We've seen them down at the wrong end towards the start of the season. Is this quite a new development that they should be down there at this point? And I say down there, they're in 13th, but they are only one defeat away from potentially being in the bottom three. Are they really in the relegation race?
Well, yeah, they are, because they're only 3 points off the drop zone. And so, they could easily get sucked into it.
All right, especially with some of the teams beneath them picking up points at Blackpool, ending their terrible run. Wigan getting that point at Anfield to finish off and spoiling Kilkenny's clean sheet record.
Well, it's a shame, but, you know, Liverpool's run this season is nothing but predictable, and I think they're still going to be up. They're still going to be ups and downs until the end. Fourth place, is it possible? 8 points, a couple of games to go.
It's not.
It's getting harder by the day, but you never know.
Yeah, all right then. Excellent. That's it for part one. Coming up very, very shortly, Spurs at Milan. A big win for Spurs at the Stadium of Light. How do you see that?
It was a win.
Yes.
I wouldn't say it was necessarily big. Nah.
All right. Another goal from Nico Kranjčar.
Yeah, he's in for Gareth Bale at the moment. And unfortunately for Spurs, Bale will be missing from their match against Milan. Doubts too over Modric and Van der Vaart, which would mean that's their three best players absent, which is a terrible shame, really. But Bale is definitely out. Modric is still recovering from having his appendix out, and Van der Vaart is a calf injury or something, I think so.
Mm-hmm. Your father would know all about those, of course.
He would indeed, yes.
Yeah. Milan, on the other hand, coming into this game in the rosiest of healths, a 4-0 win for them against a frankly rather weak-looking Parma.
They'll be missing Pirlo and Ambrosini, which is always something important. I mean,
it's funny, but all this run of games they've had recently, and I know that they've stumbled a lot. They've had a lot of draws, and they've let Inter get back into the title picture. But it's been without the likes of Pirlo there in midfield. They just had injury after injury in the middle of the park, which is why they've had to move Thiago Silva up into becoming a kind of supplementary midfielder. And it worked pretty well, and there's a lot of talk that he might be occupying a central midfield role. On Tuesday night,
he's a great player. He can do that, definitely, for sure. He was one of these guys that you saw him and when he was still in the youth academy at Fluminense, and you said, "Well, that boy is gonna do something." He was already considered the best defender in Brazil like 4 years ago or something like that. They were already saying, "Well, for many people, he should have occupied a place in the Brazilian central defense in the World Cup." Mm. He was there as a backup, but. You know, he's a classic Brazilian defender. You know, the vintage kind of that actually knows how to play, knows how to distribute the ball, and doesn't whack people around. It's not like Lucio, which is much more like a bull on a free run than a proper master of the ball. You see,
And Nesta back in the team for this clash.
Can I just ask you, how do you think Allegri will approach tomorrow's game? Will he sort of play classic Italian side in Europe at home, win the first leg 1-0, or do you think they will take advantage of Spurs' injuries and perhaps go for it a little more?
I think that they'll go for it a bit more, but just because that's the way Milan play. I think Allegri, as a player and also as a manager, has been very much all about attacking. They're not the best at the back, although Nesta coming back will help. Thiago Silva has been in fantastic form. The fullbacks are both very vulnerable, which is why it's crucial, I think, whether Bale plays or not, because of all the teams to face him, I think Milan would be very easy pickings for the Welshman's pace down the wing. But up front, you just got to worry about that extraordinary triumvirate.
Talking about firepower, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, obviously in Spain, there's some incredible records being notched up. But in Italy, certainly, there's nothing to match Ibrahimovic, who, when he's not scoring, is setting up delightful balls for his teammates, whether it's Robinho or Cassano.
Ibrahimovic is in all the time.
He's the kind of fulcrum up front. Cassano, it goes through Robinho him and he distributes and Pato, to. Yeah. I don't know whether it'll be Pato or Cassano, and whether it'll be, say, Robinho behind Ibra and Pato. There's some talk today that Seedorf would be playing behind, but I really don't think that'll be. But I think it's a Milan team that will look to dominate the game, to look to establish the kind of game it is and play forward. I mean, it's the way Milan play, you know?
Perhaps Seedorf would be important for this game. It's Champions League experience, you know, as we call in Brazil, he's a kind of an old whore that knows the business quite well, you know, so you put him there.
Right. Note to Richard Keys, CV to Sao Paulo. Right. Okay. Right. Good weekend for... Milan have a rotten record against English teams. It bears mentioning since 2007 when they beat Liverpool. They keep getting knocked out by English teams. Having said that, they have had a good weekend because they won and Inter lost 1-0 at this... Stadio Olimpico in Turin to Juve with all the pace and alacrity into of a team playing underwater. They really were sluggish. And
I was looking at some tweets last night, and people were saying Leonardo, both at Milan and at Inter, his record against the big sides has been really quite poor. Even though he's a lovely guy, he's not a top level tactical.
That's an interesting point.
Ta-da!
What's that?
I said it when he was appointed.
Right.
Very nice guy.
What are you doing now, Fernando?
It was my way to say I told you so.
Oh, right. Okay.
Ta-da!
Right. Okay.
Sore throat is actually preventing me from singing tune. I'm so sorry.
Anyway, yeah, it's an interesting point. I mean, Inter never win at Juve, but yes. And Matri got his third goal in two, the fellow that myself and Paolo were dissing the other day. So he's obviously looking good. Just quickly, because I know we all want to move on from our exciting Serie A corner, should mention that, you know, they say they never win in Turin, but there were two important taboos beaten this week in Serie A. One was Napoli, who got their first victory in Rome for 18 years to stay second in the league just behind Milan.
I meant to ask you on that because they were 66-1 to win the league at the start of the season. I mean, do you really think they can?
Three points behind,
20 odd years.
Yeah, I mean, Milan are going to drop points between here and the end of the season. Napoli only 3 points behind. They can win that game, the Derby of the South, and why not? The other big taboo was Fiorentina, who were at Palermo, who have the best home record in Serie A, and Fiorentina hadn't won a game away for a year. And they came away with a 4-2 victory. Brilliant game. Could have been way more goals than that. Absolutely fantastic. Berami looking very good for Fiorentina, who absolutely tore the Sicilians apart on the break. All very exciting. Napoli. Yeah.
I just wanted to ask, did Mutu end up staying at Fiorentina?
Yeah, he did. He apologised and he's been reintegrated into the
society.
Yeah. Napoli playing Villarreal this Thursday. That's exciting. Roma host Shakhtar in the Champions League. Now, Arsenal beat Wolves. It was a 2-0 victory. Both goals from Robin van Persie. Now, Barcelona. Let's dial up Sid.
James.
Hi. We're all very excited here.
Why is that then?
Well, one of the really big names in the sport coming to London this week. I'm referring to Sid Lowe, special guest in our live Football Weekly extra.
You know, it's been so popular. I've had Sid Lowe's sister Sally trying to get her partner some tickets because they were sold out so quickly. She wasn't able to buy them.
Sean, did you give her
I'm
some
not
tickets?
I'm sure that my sister wanting to go counts as popular, does it?
Do you have a sister called Sally, Sid?
I do indeed. Sean's not making that up. That's true.
Well, did you give her the tickets?
Well, I'm waiting for super Uber producer Matt Hall to come up with the goodies, but he hasn't yet.
Shall I throw a sort of, what do you call it, a divas drop here and say, if my sister's not in, I'm not going.
Go ahead, Sean, then we can all have the night off.
The other thing is, Sid, because I know you don't like taking stairs, we've got all the lifts ready to go straight to the... Because it's like, Sid's a bit like...
What do you mean? I was expecting to carry me on some sort of throne thing with a person at each end.
Right. Sid.
I'm not even getting in a lift.
Also this week, Barcelona in town.
Barcelona are in town. Yeah. Which town do you mean? You mean London town?
I mean London town. And the question is, can Leo Messi do it on a rainy February night at the Emirates?
Well, yes, he can. Whether or not he will this time round, I don't know. But yes, he certainly can. One of the things that I was actually talking to when we were doing the Xavi interview, I asked him about and pointed out this Stoke thing, and his response was well, yeah, have people never been to Soria to play against Numancia?
Right, yeah. Fair point. You did an interview with Xavi, didn't you, on Saturday? It was very enjoyable, Sid.
I thought you left out some very obvious questions. I thought it was mediocre at best.
Yeah, so did I.
What is Xavi's favourite colour, Barry wants to know. Yeah. Anyway, now, here's another question for you. How do you beat Barcelona?
Very good question. I actually think Arsenal are a much better place than they were last year to do so. I think Xavi actually makes quite a good point when he says that he thinks the fact that they played last year maybe is beneficial to Arsenal rather because they've seen Barcelona. There's maybe going to be a slightly different attitude this time around. The fact that Cesc Fabregas will be fit properly for both games, the return of Van Persie's being fit, I'm assuming he's fit anyway. Nasri and Walcott playing very well, although Barcelona were genuinely fearful of Walcott last year as well. So I think there's an opportunity. If you look at the games that Barcelona have lost, it's tended to be the sort of, if you like, the old-fashioned way of trying to beat a team that fundamentally you go into the game believing is better than you, which is to defend very deep, to be very aggressive, to try and funnel them inside all the time, and then catch them on the break. And Barcelona not winning football match shock. They didn't win this weekend. I went up to Asturias to see them against Sporting on Saturday night, and they were really quite poor, I thought, in the first half, Barcelona. In the second half, pretty unlucky. Had it not been for three or four good saves from the Sporting keeper, then maybe Barcelona would have got a victory. But certainly they showed, I think, at the weekend that they can occasionally be frustrated. The question mark is, will Arsenal play like that? Is that their natural game? Do they know how to play like that? But I do think it's true that there's a possibility that the physical intensity maybe that Arsenal can put into the game is something that Barcelona don't that often experience in Spain. They do it occasionally, but not perhaps quite as often as they would in other leagues.
Well, Sid, one thing that was quite interesting when Arsenal played Wolves at the weekend, they actually really played a high line. They really pushed up on the full backs, and they pressed the high line. Now, am I right in thinking that's what Real Madrid did in El Clasico back in November, and they got absolutely punished?
Yeah, I think this is the thing. I mean, in a way, it's very difficult to say, look, this is how you play Barcelona, because teams have tried to play Barcelona lots of ways, and most teams have been beaten playing lots of ways. But certainly there is a belief that if you step up against Barcelona, then you offer them the one thing that's occasionally difficult, which is difficult, I think, for any team, but occasionally difficult, which is to get beyond the side. If you step up, then obviously you get beyond them more simply with a ball through the gap. Now, Barcelona can deliver those passes, certainly Xavi and Messi. And Messi, I thought, was, despite not scoring, brilliant in the Clasico against Real Madrid with a couple of his assists to David Villa. And Madrid certainly paid, I think, for having a very high defensive line. But we've also seen some teams try and defend very deep and achieve nothing as well, because that almost is willingly giving the ball up to Barcelona. Perhaps the team that actually, I know this sounds bizarre, but the team that perhaps played the best against Barcelona were Espanyol. And Espanyol were beaten 5-1 and did play high, aggressive, very, very intense. They tried to take the game to Barcelona and look for them rather than wait for them. And I think that in a way, you watch that game, you thought, wow, Barcelona are really suffering here. But ultimately, they did find a way through. I suspect that the lesson, simply because it's an easier tactic to employ, really, than very high and very intense, will probably be to sit deep against Barcelona, very much as Inter Milan did last year. Now, of course, Inter Milan got through against Barcelona in the semi-final, but it was very, very close. And that's a tactic where I wouldn't necessarily say, oh, it's genius, because I don't think it is particularly clever to work out that if you sit very deep and be very defensive, you might not concede goals. But it is perhaps the most sensible tactic.
Sid, Puyol is out for the game. Busquets should be back, though. He was much missed in the game at Sporting Gijón.
Was. Barcelona started without Eric Abidal, who was missed as well. I know a lot of people wouldn't necessarily believe, but Abidal's been playing very, very well this season. And actually the back end of last as well. Puyol was out for injury, and Pep Guardiola said he didn't think he'd make it for London. Busquets was left out. Pedro was left out. Those were both left out to guarantee that they will be fit against Arsenal, so they'll both start. And Barcelona really did miss them. There's still an issue with Javier Mascherano, which is, I think right now at least, he's a very good player, possibly not in quite the right team in terms of the style that Barcelona are playing. But from his point of view, and in defence of him, of course, it's very, very difficult to get a grip of that style for Barcelona when you don't play in it every single week. And I think it's still taking Mascherano a little bit of time to get used to that. And Barcelona really weren't particularly good in the first half. Afellay didn't play very well. Pedro came on and made a real difference in the second half. I don't have any doubt at all that he'll start against Barcelona, and that so will Busquets.
Against Arsenal, yeah.
Against Arsenal, even, yeah.
Yeah. So, just 5 points, the lead in the league now, because Real Madrid did win, despite the fact they were down to 10 men after 90 seconds when Casillas was sent off. So, is there a new mood of optimism there in Madrid?
Yeah, of course there is. I must admit, I mean, Mourinho said after the game that he said, well, when we went down to 10 men after whatever it was, 91 seconds or 81 seconds or whatever it was, everybody in Spain thought we would lose. And I'm thinking, I didn't, not to try and say I'm a smart ass or anything, but I think lots of people didn't either, because in a way that took the game into Mourinho territory. Yes, of course, it's always risky. You never know if it's going to come off. But the sense of creating kind of a collective spirit by being the man down and feeling a bit hard done by, playing on the break, which is the way that Mourinho likes to play, being very, very aggressive, very competitive, which again is partly a Mourinho style, and to some extent actually a Real Madrid style. And I think Real Madrid do have that kind of depth of spirit that perhaps other teams in Spain don't always have, that belief that it will come good. And Madrid, although it was broadly speaking playing on the break last night, I thought were actually really quite impressive against Espanyol. 1-1-0, and had it not been for Adebayor's pretty dire finishing on occasions, could have made it two or maybe even three. And in that sense, yeah, there's real optimism because Madrid have shown, or at least this is what the Madrid side of the divide wants to believe, Madrid have shown that they've got that kind of never say die attitude and kind of application that perhaps other teams wouldn't have, and that some teams would give up in a situation Madrid wouldn't. The problem with that, of course, is that however good Madrid are between now and then the season, it's still not necessarily in their hands.
Sid, one final thing. We're going to have a bit of a Ronaldo love special later on.
Brilliant.
Insert your own jokes here. How good are all the great players you've seen in your time there in Spain? How would you rate him? Where would you stick him?
I'd be really tempted to stick him at the very, very top. It's so hard to judge exactly how to rate Ronaldo because that season at Barcelona in 96-97, he was unreal. It was quite bizarre. At times, it was embarrassing for the rest of the league watching him play because it was sort of different to the way that Messi is because Ronaldo was this force of nature. He was very, very skillful, but he would get the ball and just kind of batter his way through things. I remember a goal he scored against Valencia when two defenders came across at him, and it was all like almost like a tube train doors closing on him, and Ronaldo just burst through the two of them, elbowed both of them out of the way, ran on and finished. I think in terms of his finishing, he's the most brilliant natural finisher I've ever seen. If you ever wanted to, you know, bet on anyone one-on-one with a keeper, would he score Ronaldo? Yes, he will, every single time. And it wasn't coached, it was just what came from him naturally. Then, of course, there was the injuries. There was, to some extent, the lack of application. Even at Real Madrid, he was a brilliant goal scorer. He just wasn't the player he'd once been. You look back at him, and I know it sounds ridiculous to say what a pity about a player who scored more World Cup goals than anyone else, who's won a World Cup, who's done amazing things. But you do look back at him and almost think, what a pity. Mm. Because he could have achieved absolutely everything. He never won a European Cup, for example, had it not been for a couple of injuries and occasionally, well, not just occasionally, quite a lot of the time, a slightly laid-back attitude to life. But there are some people who say, and I'd probably given the benefit of the doubt on this, that maybe if you tried to regiment Ronaldo, it just wouldn't have worked. I think that's probably true. One of his former teammates said to me recently that the thing about Ronaldo is that we used to actually say to the coach, listen, boss, if Ronaldo doesn't want to train, don't make him train. Because, you know, there's no point. Just let him be happy because that's the way he is. And that Ronaldo used to have this habit of saying, eh, it's all right, boss, I'll get you two goals. And the thing was, of course, he would go and get them two goals.
Now, question for Fernando Duache from Blue Legend, who says, what do you think about David Luiz? Because he's worried about another Brazilian correspondent on another football service. Slating the fellow. Criticism. I've only seen him play three times, says Blue Legend. He's done very well each time. Looks quite mature for a 23-year-old. How good is he, David Luiz?
Well, he's got a good reputation in Brazil and in Portugal. I've seen him playing only once. It was a friendly against Ukraine in Derby, of all places. And he looks quite mature for a player that age. It is well considered by Mano Menezes, the Brazilian team coach. He's been starting every game alongside Thiago Silva. I think he can be a good player, and he could be a great signing for Chelsea.
All right. A lot of talk that he's going to be in the lineup, I think, tonight against Fulham in the Premier League.
Well, hasn't Carlo Ancelotti said that John Terry is no longer assured of his place in this Chelsea starting lineup, which I'd imagine didn't go down too well with
I'm mystified by that. I can't imagine Carlo walked into the dressing room and said, by the way, John, until now you've been guaranteed your place, but you're no longer assured of your place.
Well, I presume he said it in a press conference when
somebody
quizzed.
Said, yeah.
Because, you know, a lot of these stories you get where a player has slammed someone or something, they haven't.
But nobody ever has a place assured in any team, or at least not officially. So.
They do, sort of.
Yeah, but Ancelotti is a great guy to manage egos. I don't think he would walk straight into this one. It was probably somebody spinning his words or something like that. Well, okay, I wasn't there, so I'm sorry if I'm actually, you know, overstepping my mark here. But from what I know from the man, he's so, like, you know, as we say, like, he loves, like, cuddling the heads of his players.
It's exactly
but
what he
But there
loves.
Are certain players, yeah. obviously, who, if fit, are automatically going to play. You know Rio Ferdinand and Nemanja Vidic will be in the United team.
Yes.
If they're fit.
That's fair. But no longer is that the case with John Terry.
Apparently not.
Apparently not. Coltrane 27 says, of the eight Champions League quarterfinalists last season, five had Frenchmen at left back. Fact. How about that? Extraordinary, isn't it? Stadium running track news. Super MJ, coming back to our discussion last week about West Ham and the Olympic Stadium and all that, it says Leighton Orient have no leg to stand on, considering they are from Clapton. This is the business of West Ham step or Spurs potentially stepping on their toes. They didn't move to Leighton until 1937 when they stole the ground of Leighton FC, who were at the time struggling to pay their rent to the local council. They also, adds Super MJ, showed their contempt for the area when between 1966 and 87 they were known purely as Orient.
I know West Ham has got a new sponsor. Sponsorship is going to be elephant.co.uk, right? Because that's what's going to happen to that stadium.
White elephant. All right, then. dearie me.
There is a very grubby cast of characters involved in that whole Olympic takeover thing. You know, got Barry Hearn, he's the Leighton Orient chairman. Sullivan and Gold and Karen Brady at West Ham.
I actually quite like Barry Hearn. I've interviewed him a couple of times.
He's a
great character.
He's a character, all right, but he's a bit of a spiv, isn't he?
Well, says whiter than white above the tables, Barry Glendening.
What the hell is that supposed to mean?
He who's never seen in football, please, get the first stone.
Anyway.
Quoting the OJC.
There you go. Now,
Hold on a second now. Explain that remark.
No, I just, you know, I mean, the Barry Hearn. What's he, and Golden Sullivan. Yeah. I mean, Golden Sullivan, fair enough. Yeah. Anyway. Good. Now, getting in contact, lots of folk about Ronaldo. As we mentioned, the three-time FIFA Player of the Year, hanging up his boots, all of a sudden, decided to call time Fernando Duarte.
Yeah, it was on the cards. I mean, when Corinthians got kicked out of the Libertadores Cup in the first round, you kind of thought, well, it was his main motivation to try to win this trophy, another one he's never won, alongside the Champions League. And there's another injury, some kind of thigh injury. You see that he couldn't just bulldoze the shark, because he's not jumping the shark. He bulldozed the shark for much longer. It's a shame because I still think he had at least another season in Brazilian football. It's interesting. He brings a lot of interest to the game. He brings a lot of money as well. And, you know, it's a fellow that actually entertains the masses. Ronaldo for too long was away from Brazil. A lot of young supporters never had the chance of actually seeing him playing. So for Corinthians supporters and for Brazilian supporters in a general way, it was good to actually see this guy live instead of on the telly.
Well, two World Cup wins, World Player of the Year three times, 97 caps for Brazil. Big numbers, and not only in his trouser labels.
One thing I think is interesting is he has a better scoring record than Careca, Bebeto, Ronaldinho, but it's some way below Romario. And Sid was saying he thought Ronaldo was the best natural goal scorer he's ever seen, but I'd actually put Romario ahead of that. He scored 55 goals in 70 games.
Oh, I totally agree. Romario technically was a better player. Romario could head a ball. Romario was better.
No, the bit before that about Romario technically was a better player
than Ronaldo, yeah, for sure.
At scoring goals or in general?
In general. Romario's scoring record is beyond discussion here. You know, the problem with Romario is that he didn't have many chances as a...
So on your list...
But Ronaldo doesn't count goals he scored on the PlayStation in his career tally, whereas Romario does. Apparently.
Technically, in terms of like technical resources, Romario is a better player. Of course, you look at Ronaldo's record, two World Cups. One of them he actually didn't play. It was Romario's World Cup 94. But you thought, I think Ronaldo would be ahead in people's minds because of his whole back from the dead story. A lot of people in 98, me included, myself included, when I was working for Globo in Brazil, we wrote, he's done. After that first knee explosion, a lot of people wrote, he's never going to be the same guy. Then he comes back and wins a World Cup.
No. But there's more to it than that. He went out with that horrible injury. He came back in a game against Lazio, I think in the Coppa Italia, at the Stadio Olimpico. And this huge build-up to the fact that finally Ronaldo, the world's best, is back. Within, I think, 4 minutes, the knee had gone again. And he was taken off in agony. And your heart broke for him then. Because you thought he made all that effort to come back. And he's just straight out, back to square one. And he came back from that...
And was the first player since Gerd Müller to score more than 6 goals in the World Cup. So.
Extraordinary. Yeah. I'm just amazed that you would say, because that season, for example, at Barcelona, even before that PSV, but then at that season at Barcelona, watching him wasn't like watching Romario. Sure, Romario was a great finisher and a great
I think he was a more complete player.
You think he was?
Yeah, I think Ronaldo. Romario was a more complete player.
Okay.
Ooh, controversial.
Well, until he left Barcelona, Ronaldo had almost a goal a game average.
Mm-hmm.
And then that's... The injury sort of
Well, the first season, no, the first season at Inter, he had a brilliant. I think he scored over 30 goals. Then the injuries started to impact, and whether it was because he'd done so much work bulking up that his knees just couldn't support it, or whether there was a lot of arguments between the Inter medical staff and the Brazil medical staff about the number of injections he had to get him through,
and the PSV stuff. When he left Cruzeiro for PSV, he was thin as a hair.
Right.
All of a sudden, he became that, you know, Copa King from Mario Bros, etc. He was really, really bulked up. And some experts in Brazil said that was it for his knees, and, you know, this growth was abnormal. Not illegal, but it was abnormal.
Right.
Do you know what the last surgery he had was?
No.
He had a vasectomy.
Really?
Before Christmas, yes.
Oh, okay.
He had his fourth child. And then decided it was time to, in his own words, close the factory. So
right.
He went and got the snip.
Okay. Excellent.
But right. He'll be sorely missed, of course. He's a guy that was a delight to watch, you know.
Smashing bloke, too.
Well, you never had to work with him. He could be very difficult to really impress. Yeah, but, you know, he's a pop star. And he could be really arrogant, but then again.
Well, I only met him a couple of times when he was an intern. He was sweetness and light, really, very, very down to earth. But, you know.
Yeah, he wasn't paid to be a PR guy. So, you know, as a player, I have nothing to say about him.
Okay. Andrew Davison.
Nothing bad to say about him.
Nothing bad, yeah, okay. Right. Andrew Davison says, ask Fernando where Ronaldo stands on the all-time list of Brazilians.
Right.
Below Romario, basically.
Yeah, Pelé, Romario, Ronaldo, and then Zico.
You're kidding me. You're putting Romario as well above Zico.
Yeah. Because Zico never won the World Cup.
Yeah, but Sean, take it.
Well, Zico, to me, I mean, my first memory of the World Cup was 82, and then Zico was this almost mythical figure that every time there was a free kick on the edge of the area, he'd score. Every time there was a three ball to make, he'd make it. I certainly would have him ahead of Romario, despite Romario being a better scorer. But there must be some other great players. Garrincha, where's Garrincha standing?
Yeah,
there? Where does some of the other
Rocky Jr.
from the same?
Garrincha would stand, well, people in Brazil are going to kill me here, but he would stand out behind Zico. Because when
isn't your daughter called Zico?
No, she's not. Oh, okay. If Cecilia was a boy,
yes,
she would be called Arthur because of Zico. Yeah, but you know, my wife now knows it because she hated the name. And I thought it was because of English royalty. No, it was because of Brazilian royalty.
Right.
I mean, me personally, in terms of passion, Zico was the best I've seen. Because I haven't seen Pelé, I haven't seen Garrincha, but, you know.
So of the ones you've seen, you would have Romario, then Ronaldo, then Zico.
Yeah, from the ones I've seen, yeah.
Prepare the steak and get a box of matches. Good. All right. Where do you see Ronaldo's future, Fernando? Coaching, partying, or into the wilderness? Ask Andrew Gibney.
He can do whatever he wants, to be honest. I mean, he could. A lot of people were asking about punditry. He's a very wise guy. He got like very kind of like quick remarks. I mean, I remember a press conference. Somebody was asking Robinho when Robinho moved to Madrid. So how is Madrid? Do you think Robinho is going to get the Spanish language really fast? And then he said, well, if he has the same professor, the same teacher as Vanderlei Luxemburgo, he never will, because he took the piece of Vanderlei's horrendous Spanish pronunciation, etc. So he could be a good pundit. If he wants to, it's something totally different. I think that boy's got so much money that if he wants us to party on, he will.
Yeah.
Doesn't need ever to work again.
If you had so much money, you know what to do, then what would you do in your life?
I'd build a giant pod from chrome and fly around the world bringing football information to happy listeners.
And if Alan Shearer can be a pundit, anybody can.
Yes. And one final... Oh, yeah, bollocks to that. Yes. I tell you what, though, there's some other Brazilian legends we haven't had in your my top 5/10, whatever. How about Ronaldinho and Rivaldo? And how is Ronaldinho doing at Flamengo?
Rivaldo be in the top 10 for sure. And by the way, he's back. He's playing for São Paulo in the Paulista Championship.
Doesn't he own a club as well?
Yeah, he does. But he kind of like got out of the club so he could play. He took, you know, he took a license.
Yes.
Kind of like a leave of absence, whatever you call that in English. And he's playing for São Paulo now. He will do the season at 38. And he's already scored. You know, it's pretty cool to see all the dinosaurs kind of like in front of the crowd. Ronaldinho for Flamengo is so-so. I mean, he's been more seen in parties than actually on the field. On the pitch, he scored a goal, but that Rio Championship is really, really poor. Let's wait until the Brazilian League starts.
It's like a Masters Cup or something.
Yeah, it's like the Sky thing, exactly like that. So let's see, you know, the Brazilian Cup, what happens. You know, he could have a massive impact. Financially speaking, a lot of people already, you know, running into the ticket offices. I mean, 20,000 people showed up in an afternoon just to see him being paraded at Flamengo in the south zone of Rio de Janeiro. So, you know, the potential is there. But let's see how it goes.
That's amazing. One final bit of Brazil news, the fact that the Under-20 World Championship Cup...
Last but not least, Brazil won the Under-20 South American Championships, which is a qualifying for London 2012.
Right.
So Brazil...
This is the team with Neymar and all that lot.
Yeah, Neymar, yes, the Under-20s. Guys, you know only Neymar, because the Ganso was injured, he couldn't play. The thing is, Brazil qualified for London 2012, Argentina didn't. So Argentina won't defend the gold medal in London. Shame, because we would love to try to win this medal by beating Argentina. Brazil never won the gold medal, and it's an obsession in the country. And perhaps London could be the final, you know, finally when it happens, and a lot of people in Brazil will be expecting so.
Yeah, I find it really strange that you were saying it's an obsession, and no one over here gives two hoots about it whatsoever. No one takes the slightest interest in the Olympic football.
Well, you give two hoots about cricket, and 75% of the world doesn't, so... Hmm. I mean, it's a tradition of team sports, which doesn't happen in England too much, apart from cycling and rowing. In Brazil and in other parts of the world, the winning a basketball medal is something really interesting, a football medal as well. There's a bigger tradition of multiple team sports, which doesn't happen around here.
There you go.
And also, it's a medal that Uruguay won, Argentina won, so Brazil say, okay, we're never going to be able to look those guys in the eye if we don't win it. And I know the Olympic tournament's nothing as serious as it used to be. But listen, if they win that medal, a lot of people will be drinking themselves to oblivion in Brazil, me included.
Marvellous stuff. Marvellous stuff. Well, that brings us to the end of today's Football Weekly. Many thanks to Barry Glendenning, Sean Ingall and Fernando Duarte.
Always a pleasure.
And producer Ben. We will be back on Thursday, and remember, it's an extra special live in front of audience of Football Weekly Extra on Thursday with Barry Glendenning, Sid Lowe and Raphael Honigstein, health and safety permitting. There will be a video version as well, also available for you to tell your friends about. So I wasn't told
about the video bit.
No, nor had I been. But
I have several chins to lose between now and Thursday.
Good luck with that one, Barry. Have a super week, everybody. We'll be back on Thursday.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.